This is a Pinball News production.
Thank you very much, Gary. Thank you for the introduction. Just before I get started, I'd just like to also welcome another of my team members here, Brian Dominey, who's come all the way over from Florida this morning. So please, if you could just give a round of applause for Brian, please. Brian will be giving a little talk later on about what he's involved with the company as well. And just before I get started, I'd just like to say a big thank you for the warm reception today. And I've also had a chance to chat to a lot of you already in the short time and say thank you very much for your welcome over here as well. So I'd like to tell you about the company that I've decided to start. Now, as you can see, Highway Pinball is the name of this company. And to begin with, I want to tell you about the Highway Pinball team that we have. First of course, there's myself. Then we have Dave Sanders, who is the game's chief designer. He's our chief game designer. Then we have Brian, who I've already just introduced you to. He is our chief software programmer. Next we have Phil Dixon, and Phil is the head of engineering and is also the 3D SolidWorks programmer as well. Then we have Dominic Clifton. He is also involved in the software programming. And finally, we have Phil Docker, who is in charge of sound and electronics. Now, a company like this is an organic company, and we're moving very fast. And as it happens, we're hiring people and having people involved on... it's happening very quickly. Now, I have an exciting announcement to give you all exclusively. In fact, I've got two exclusive announcements to give everybody at Expo as my presentation goes on. And one of those is a very exciting announcement, an appointment with Highway Pinball. Now, I'm sure many of you have seen these kind of figures. And basically, what I want to do is I want to tell you how I got involved in pinball and tell you exactly the direction that we're going in. Basically, I started off in the early 90s, like many of you did, just playing pinball. I found a local bar that I'd go to after work, and I'd start playing pinball competitively. And, you know, I really got enticed by the whole thing, and I really got interested in it, and things started moving forward as every year progressed. I moved over to Ireland from the UK about 11 years ago, and I decided, after having one pinball machine for a while, never really being all that involved in it, I decided I really wanted to get back involved in pinball. So I tried to find somewhere in Ireland that could sell pinball machines, and there was nowhere. Absolutely nobody was selling any kind of pinball machine, new or used, in Ireland. So I thought, okay. I actually bought two pinball machines from Poland, bizarrely. And then I thought, well, if nobody else is doing it, I might as well do it. I was fairly handy with repairing pinball machines, so I thought, okay, I'll start bringing pinball machines into the country. My customer base started growing. I was selling to private customers, but then I also started having pubs, arcades, operators who'd been operating pinball machines back in the early 90s who wanted to get back involved in it again. I then started operating pinball machines myself in a range of pubs around the sort of the Midwest of Ireland. At that point, then I started doing restorations. I started getting more and more involved in competitive pinball play. And I then actually moved on to running a pinball show called the UK Pinball Party. Have any of you heard of the UK Pinball Party? Yep. Cool, excellent. Yes, so the UK Pinball Party, if not the biggest, it's one of the biggest pinball shows in Europe, and I've been doing it for 3 years, and that's been going very well. Now, over the years, I've talked to a lot of operators, and of course, as everybody can see here, by the time we've reached 2011, the number of pinball machines sold globally is only a very small fraction of what it was back, of course, in the 90s. So I started asking operators, what's going on? Why are there no pinball machines on sites anymore? And a picture was starting to form. One of them was the cost side of things, and the other was the sort of the reliability issues and the serviceability issues of pinball machines. So about 7 years ago, I did a feasibility study about starting a pinball company and addressing all of these points. And it was quite an intense feasibility study. We did a big plan about how we were going to do it. We were going to redesign pinball from the ground upwards. But it just didn't. It wasn't the right timing for me to do that. So I kind of put it on the back burner and was doing other things. And then 2 years ago, I decided maybe now is the right time. I had a lot more experience in operating machines, fixing machines, and I felt I had a much better understanding of the market as a whole. So what is our mission statement? Our mission statement, quite simply, and it's quite a bold statement, is that we want to make pinball mainstream again. That is our idea. We feel that the market at the moment, and there are some great machines out in the market, we feel, though, that the machines in the market at the moment are more addressing the collector end of the market. What we want to do, without ignoring collectors, because, of course, we're perfectly fine with selling machines to the public market, to the collectors' market as well, of course. But first and foremost, we want to see machines back on site again, because we feel that pinball has been lost to a whole generation of players. So this is our mission statement, to make pinball mainstream again. So what we've done is we've addressed cost and affordability, reliability, serviceability, technology, and fun games. Now, I'd like to introduce you to the Highway Pinball Game Change System. Now, some of you have seen something very similar to this, of course, or most of you have, of course, with the Pinball 2000 concept from WMS in the late 90s. We're doing this, but we're taking it a step further. Our system is such that you can put a new game into an existing cabinet in less than 10 minutes. Quite simply, a game unit consists of a playfield which comes in its own box, sitting on its own runners. It comes with side decal panels, which of course will brand the new game in the existing cabinet. It will come with a translight in the back glass, the back box area, and finally, the game software itself. So the idea is, of course, from an operator's point of view, the days of having to cart around a 120-kilogram piece of furniture between sites all the time, we want that to become a thing of the past. An operator will simply wheel in a much lighter unit, such as this, take out the old system from the existing cabinet, put in a new one, and within 10 to 15 minutes, you've got a brand new game on site, taking new earnings again. This shows you in a little bit more detail there about how the whole thing is packaged separately. Now, we've got reliability. What we have decided to do is we have looked at all of the existing designs for mechanisms, and we've redesigned them all to be as reliable as possible. Obviously, the more moving parts that you have in a pinball machine, the more things, as we all know, potentially can go wrong in pinball machines. So with this in mind, every mechanism that we are redesigning has got this as one of the major priorities. Here you can see the new flipper mechanism that we've designed. Here you can actually see the new drop target mechanism that we've designed as well. Now, from a manufacturing point of view, if we wanted to have a 3-bank drop target mechanism or 5-bank drop target mechanism, there are only three parts unique to each layout or assembly, which means that we have the flexibility to be able to increase to a 4, 5, 6-bank drop target assembly, whatever we want to do, without significantly increasing the cost and having to completely redesign a mechanism. Now, serviceability as well. I think we all know that in the early 90s, pinball, there were a lot of experienced technicians out in the market. Operators had these experienced technicians and they were servicing games. However, as more and more coin-op equipment became modular, such as fruit or slot machines, I think the level of the tech base went down significantly to the point where if anything went wrong with a slot machine, a technician would just go there, unplug the CPU or the MPU, put in a new one, and it was up and running again. But of course, with pinball, it's a little bit more complicated than that. And what we've decided to do is every mechanism that we've designed has got modularity in mind. So, for example, a slingshot mechanism will be the same on the left-hand side as it is on the right-hand side. In order to change such a mechanism, it can be done in a matter of minutes. You simply undo 4 bolts, unplug it, put in the new one, bolt it back up again, you're back up and running again. So the idea is, of course, if an operator, for example, doesn't have a part in stock, he just needs to call up the distributor or in the UK ourselves, 24-hour next day dispatch, they've got the new part. They don't have to have the skill required to rebuild a new flipper mechanism, as we know, which can be quite an intricate thing. You just simply put the new flipper mechanism in and you're up and running again. And this philosophy or ethos is the same in every major mechanism that we're redesigning. That's what I meant to show you, actually. I couldn't understand why the slide has suddenly disappeared from my presentation. That's the logo of my show, the UK Pinball Party. Okay, so we've just gone and addressed the serviceability and the reliability side of things. We are going to be making 2 products. This is a key philosophy of what my company is doing. We're going to be making a hardware unit package and a game unit package. Now, the whole idea of a hardware unit package is that an operator in particular will buy this, put this on a site, cover the investment of this over a number of years, but not have to move this system. So this system goes into a site and stays there for however many years the machine is going to be operated for. The second product we're making, of course, is the game unit, which I've just gone and mentioned to you. Now, of course, the advantage of doing something like this from a cost perspective is, let's say, for argument's sake, a game unit costs $2,500. If an operator, at the end of the cycle, when takings are starting to go down with that machine, if the operator, let's say, doesn't have other sites that he can rotate the existing game units into, maybe cost is a big issue for him, but he still wants to have the latest game, he can then sell his game unit on the second-hand market. Let's say he gets half of his money back, so he gets $1,250 back. That means the net spend cost after 4, 8, 12 months is only another $1,250 for the latest game unit. And one of the things that we're looking to do is to actually have a home version of the software, something with a much deeper rules set, and actually tie that in with a new game launch. So we have a motivated seller, because the operator at that point then wants to sell on his game and get his money back. We have a motivated buyer, because a collector, of course, will be much more interested in the home version of the software, and let's say he's been waiting for this time so it doesn't cost them quite as much money. At that point then, we have a motivated buyer, a motivated seller, and everybody is happy. Now, our hardware units are going to come in two versions. We've got the standard version, which has a 10.4-inch LCD screen mounted within the playfield surface itself. On the top will just be standard glass or toughened non-reflective glass. There'll be two options there. The deluxe version is using some of the latest technology which is currently available at the moment, and that is transparent screen technology. Now, what you can see here is there's a magazine cartridge on top of the unit on the right there, which is made up of a number of layers. The top layer is a non-reflective sheet of glass, toughened glass. The middle layer is actually a transparent LCD screen. And then the bottom layer is either another glass sheet or a Perspex sheet or a polycarbonate sheet to protect from air balls underneath. Of course, the great advantage of doing something like this, and it really is the latest technology, the films in the summer, for example, Prometheus, X-Men, they were all using transparent screen technology. Is the advantage of using something like this is you can really deliver a great experience for the players, because they're playing through the game through a glass surface, but you've got all the graphics capabilities on top. I mean, you can have interactive graphics as well. We're looking at having this touch screen as well, so you'll actually just be able to touch parts of the glass and actually change aspects of the game. You can bring up menus of what the high scores on the table are, what your mission objectives are. There really is a great potential there, and we intend to exploit that potential and deliver a really amazing pinball experience, especially to new customers as well. I mean, another aspect of that is we have at the moment, I mentioned before, there's a generation of players who've been lost to pinball. Now, I call these players, these people who don't play pinball, the Xbox generation. Yeah, they're the kids of today who, you know, have grown up on PlayStations, Xboxes. Many of them don't even know, of course, what pinball even is. So for me, we have to give them something different, something to entice them, something which brings some of the latest technology to the table for them to walk past it and say, oh, what's that? And, you know, actually want to go up there, stick in a couple of quarters or a pound, play the game, and actually think, oh, this is really actually quite cool. So that is that's the system that we're going to be incorporating into our games. Another part is innovation of what we're doing as well. As I said, we're trying to make our games as reliable as possible. One of the things, for example, I've repaired so many machines, one of the things that can often go wrong is microswitches. We all know they're great out of the box, but microswitches in time, they become less and less reliable. It can become very difficult to fault find with microswitches which are only working intermittently. So we're looking at ways to actually completely remove microswitches from the playfield surface. So we're using something, one of the technologies we're using for switching is capacitive switch technology. So what basically happens, you don't have to have a hole going through the playfield. You basically have the sensor underneath, similar to the way that eddy switches, horse sensors and so on traditionally work. Now, you see that we got some inserts at the bottom there because we feel that when the ball is passing over, it's not just good enough to give them a sound to give them confirmation that the ball has actually rolled over the switch, over where the switch should be. Of course, when you see a mechanical switch poking through the playfield, you can actually physically see it's been activated and you assume that it's doing what it should be doing. So we actually have a sort of a pulsing LED, so when a switch is activated, it will give a little pulse, so you can see, the switch has been activated. Because you can't just rely on sounds, because, of course, if a pinball machine is in a busy bar or pub and there's lots of music or sound, quite often you can't even hear the music or anything that's going on a pinball machine. So it's a bit of a sort of a fail-safe there for the player. That's the actual capacitive switch sensor board we're currently using at the moment. Now, the other issue and the final issue in this segment is fun games. We believe that in order to entice a new generation of pinball players, it's important to not have a game which is too difficult to understand for a new player. It's a fine balance between giving them too much reward too soon, but also making it easy enough for them to play. So we want to address both new players and existing players. So for the new player, they should be able to walk up to the game, easily understand what it is that they need to do, and get some, not instant reward, but some fairly instantaneous rewards. So they think, oh, that's pretty cool, and I want to, you know, get to know the game better. On the other hand, of course, you want to have the game rules deep enough so, you know, seasoned players who, you know, they can actually understand that they need to do more and more to actually unlock the deeper features in the game. So we believe that we're addressing both elements there. We actually have our own unique PCB board set, which has been designed specifically for us. What you see here is the I.O. board, which has got all of the MOSFETs, which basically drive all of the solenoids in our game. Now, what I'd like to do for a minute before I go on is I'd like to hand over to Brian, and Brian's going to tell you a little bit about the software development side of things. So, Brian, if you'd like to come down, please.
Okay, so I've been, first of all, I live in the U.S., unlike all of the rest of the design team in the U.K. Andy contacted me about March or April of this year, and he was looking to bring on some people to do software for his company, and he explained what he was doing, and I thought it sounded really cool, and it would be a lot of fun to work on. A little bit about my background. First of all, I'm a software developer by trade. I've been working in software for, this is my 18th year. I worked for a telecommunications hardware provider for most of that time. So, I mean, we were building cutting-edge switches and routers that are used in the phone networks. The things that we had to do with that was, like, reliability was number one, and performance was number two. Those were the two things we had to do. And that kind of translates to pinball and to this project, because we want this to be a reliable product, but we also want it to be a high-performance product. We want to show off all of the equipment and all the bells and whistles as much as we can. So the other thing is, in my spare time over the last 7 years, I've been working on a pinball operating system for fun. I've always been interested in pinball and software and bringing those two together. And I always wondered what it was like to, you know, how do you actually make a pinball machine work? What does that take? So I developed a system called FreeWPC because it initially targeted the Williams WPC platform. But the goal from the beginning was to design something that could be used anywhere. And I looked at, you know, other legacy pinball platforms, and the WPC platform was the easiest to get working. So I worked on that since 2005. It's a hobbyist project, or it has been for a while, but it's gotten very stable, incredibly stable. A lot of people are using it and making their own games, their own rules for these old games. So Andy saw what I was doing and wanted to know, is this something that we could use for his company? So obviously there's differences between every pinball platform out there. So we can't just take something and slap it on and have it work. He's doing some really cool new things that are not easy. So there's work to be done there. But being able to start from something that is working, so, you know, the basics of how do you make a flipper flip and how do you keep score and replays and all the things you expect a pinball game to do, I mean, all of that is already written. So we're starting from that as a base, and now we're modifying it and doing things like changing out the DMD code to do, you know, the screens. There'll be new sound systems. I mean, we're using the latest equipment that we can get, the latest hardware technology. So it's all new stuff. So there's work to be done there. There's a lot of work to be done, but it's within reach, and it's something that I have a lot of experience working on, in my other jobs, so I think we're going to pull this off. If you have any questions about specifics about the software, we can get into that at the Q&A at the end.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Now, we'd like to talk to you about the game and what our first game is going to be. Now, I'm sure you've all seen Cersei's Animal House in Pinball News and Pin Game Journal. Now, I want to show you something. Just before I move on, I want to show you something here, and I actually want to ask a question. And can anybody tell me something interesting about this picture, please? On the phone there? Yes, her feet are the same. I'm not sure if any of you have actually seen this. We did make a mistake when we released the flyer initially, and you see that she does actually have two right feet. And what we've actually got here, and if anybody is interested, I've actually got, that then people can take away afterwards, I have a number of flyers here, which are the regular flyers with her normal feet in them, so please feel free to take some flyers away. I also have some technical flyers which tell all about the new innovations going into our products. But I also have, and I'm told that these could be collectible at some point in the future, I have three of the original two right-footed flyers. So can I just see three hands? Anybody who wants these? Oh, jeez. Okay, yeah, okay, that's fair enough. Okay, that's fair enough. What I'm going to do, what I will actually do, because I do have a small pile of these still back at HQ back in South Wales. Now, I'm going to give out three here now, but if anybody does want any, then if they want to email me, I'll do my best to get them to you, okay? One for the auction. Okay, that sounds fair. We'll save one for the auction then. I say, anybody who wants them, we'll find a way to get them to you. So this brings me on to one of the two big announcements I have for you here today. Cersei's Animal House is not going to be our first game. The reason it's not going to be our first game is for two reasons. One of them is that we're already at a fairly advanced stage with the development of the game, and we've had not one, but two Whitewood units built. And one thing that came from that testing, and one thing that was very clear, is that we had a very, very fast game. The shots on it are very fast, the flow on it is very good, and there's some great combo opportunities. Now, the whole idea about Cersei's Animal House is you've got this lovely bartender lady who's serving up drinks, in sort of Greek mythology style, serving up drinks to customers, and they're turning into different animals. And that's great, but it doesn't really go with the flow and the speed of the game. That's the first thing. The second thing was, as I've mentioned to you, operators are what we're really trying to target in order to get these back onto sites again. And they said to us that the theme is great, but maybe everybody won't get it. So, you know, we're prepared to admit that maybe we didn't get it quite right with our first game. So we decided to take the best elements of our playfield, match them with a theme that really would go with that, and also, you know, the core target group of new pinball players is 16 to 34-year-olds. So we wanted a theme that they could really get into as well. So it gives me great pleasure to exclusively reveal to everybody here at Expo what our first game, due for release in early 2013, is going to be. Well, that's the two right feet, sorry. That's the two right feet, yeah, that's it. Okay, here is the first game. Full Throttle. As you can see, it's a bike racing game, motorbike racing. It's all about speed. It's about adrenaline. It's all about trying to get the glory. It's trying to win, trying to be the best that you can be on two wheels. So Full Throttle is going to be our first game. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you about some certain aspects of the game and show you about different features and toys that we've got planned for the game. And then the game's designer is going to give you a short 2-minute video talk on his ideas behind the game as well. As you can see, it's a two-flipper game. This is the SolidWorks version of the game. And that brings on to the first of the toys on our game. Now, there's no artwork package on the playfield yet. There will be in approximately 3 to 4 weeks. But what you see here is two wheels of a sports motorbike. These wheels are mechanical wheels underneath a Perspex top cover. These wheels will spin at speed and be lit up with a kind of a strobing effect, a different lighting effects from underneath, giving the idea that the whole thing is travelling very fast, and you will see this beneath the playfield surface. Now, the great thing about this toy is during certain modes, in particular multi-ball, these pop up out of the playfield to give you spinning rubber wheels, which will deflect the ball in all kinds of directions and basically randomise the path of the ball. In particular, during multi-ball, the jackpot shot, or one of the major jackpot shot, is actually in between those wheels. So it's a real sort of risk-reward thing, where you get it right, you'll get the jackpot. You get it wrong, it will hit the wheels and it could go anywhere. So it's a real randomizer. The next big toy in our game is the chain loop accelerator. Basically, this is a vertical accelerator whereby, if you see in the bottom left-hand side, there are two wheels which will travel very fast, capture the ball and slingshot it at great speed vertically around the two U-bends and bring it back down to feed the ball. And that will be a ball lock feature. So you can have one, two or multiple balls locked within this cycle. An up-down post will actually pop up between the wheels when we want to bring the balls back into play. They'll drop down into a scoop assembly. And if you see, you can actually see the main scoop on the right-hand side, which ejects balls back into play. And there's a small subway connecting the two of those together. Then we have the captive ball bike. You hit the captive ball, and the bike ends up doing wheelies. It's as simple as that. Then we have the top ramp diverter. You'll notice that it's kind of an X configuration for the ramp, where the diverter can come down, and basically you can control whichever direction you want the ball to go. So there's many different exit possibilities, entry and exit possibilities for the ball. We have the orbit diverter at the back, which is something, again, which has been carried on from the first design of the game, Cersei's Animal House. What this diverter does, and I've got two shots of it here for you, is you have the right to left orbit going at the top of the screen. At the bottom, effectively, it's the left to right orbit. When the diverter is in the up position, of course, the orbits can be completed as per normal. When a diverter is down, when it's going from a right to left orbit, it then exits through the middle channel. When it's going on a left-to-right orbit, it exits then into the chain loop accelerator and also into the scoop assembly there for jackpot and related shots. This shows you another perspective of the diverter working when it's down on the right-to-left orbit. Now, the other thing I want to just show you briefly here, just to illustrate the raw speed of the game, is, and this is these are points which have been kept over from the initial design, is just how fast the game is. You have the inner loop here, which is quite unusual for a two flipper game to have a looping facility on it, where it will loop the ball and bring it down the left return lane and back to the left flipper. We have a different in-lane, out-lane configuration, which is more in line, I believe, with sort of late 70s, early 80s ballet games. The orbits themselves, of course, are also very quick and really do slingshot the ball back round into play again. So, that is Full Throttle. What I want to do now is I just want to play you a video from our designer, who will just explain a little bit about the game as well for us.
Hi everyone, this is Dave Sanders at Highway Pinball, chief designer of our first game, Full Throttle. Hi to everyone at Expo, I can't be there this year, but there's always next time. I'm going to spend a little bit of time to describe the game and how it all works. It's all about fast flow, it's about shots, loops and combos. As you can see, it's a standard two flipper game, but it has a lot of non-standard features on and ideas that haven't been seen in a long time, such as the reverse in-lane and out-lane structure here, which is part of this loop shot, which will shoot the ball at very fast speed across the play field and back to this flipper. We have two banks of drop targets on either side. We have a captive ball, which leads to this toy, the wheelie bike, which will tilt backwards every time you hit it. We have these two discs here, which are spinning discs, and they will rise from the playfield at key moments and act as spinning bumpers to provide an extra bit of challenge. Two ramp shots meet in the middle, and this diverter will send them either side to feed back by the flipper, and two very fast-flowing orbits, which can send the ball into the pot bumper area, or round to the other side, or into this area here. And what this is the chain loop accelerator. Lock a ball, and you'll see it zooming around this area until your multi-ball starts. Now, the game itself is about racing through different countries and about stacking multi-balls through different forms of biking. Make the shots as many times as you can, and you can stack anything from a two-ball multi-ball all the way up to six. We should have the next development stage of this white wood in from between 4 to 6 weeks, and hopefully we'll have a lot more to show you then. So I'll see you soon. Bye for now.
So just to elaborate a little bit on what Dave was saying there about the game rules, as I said, we're trying to keep it as easy to understand as possible, and there are two key elements to the rule set of our first game. One of them is all about skills. It's about motorbiking skills. It's as if you are a Grand Prix motorbike racer. How did you get there? You had to, let's say, hone your skills by doing different things. So the different modes, the multiple stackable modes that Dave was referring to, there'll be motocross, for example. There will be stunt biking like wheelies and stoppies. There'll be street racing, circuit racing, and also, I think I mentioned stunt biking, street racing, circuit racing. I believe that's all of the five. So those are the five different modes there. And as I said, the scoop, the way it will work, just to tell you very briefly, is if you activate one of those by doing certain things on the playfield, so it's lit, you collect it in the scoop. If you collect just the one, that'll give you a two-ball multi-ball. If you wait and collect two of them, you'll get a three-ball multi-ball. And if you basically hold off until you have them all lit, then you can access straight away a six-ball multi-ball. That's one aspect of the rules. The other is that there are seven countries represented by the flags on the playfield surface, and what these will do is these are the different races in the different countries. So that just gives you a brief insight into where it is that we're going. So I'd just like to finish off this presentation before we do it, take any questions, by just announcing one other piece of news for you, which is another appointment that has just been made. And we have another game designer who's just come on board, and that game designer is John Trudeau. So if you maybe, what is your opinion? Is this a good move? Excellent. Well, listen, thank you very much for listening to my presentation. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer any.
The cabinet is filled with glass eyes and centric display, or do you retheme your cabinet by sliding?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The sides of the cabinet are such that the decals, which obviously are branding a particular game, are on panels which slide in to the side of the cabinet. And they are also lit from behind as well, so you also have like a lit translight effect from the sides of the cabinets too, to really give it a different feel. Yes, that's absolutely what we're doing. Please.
I'm glad to see an emphasis on making something that an operator can afford and is easy for, you know, cheap and easy for them.
Yes.
But we're seeing all the custom parts, I'm concerned that it may actually drive up the cost. How are you managing that?
That's a very interesting question. One of the ways we're doing this is we're trying to standardise units as much as possible. For example, the flipper mechanism has been designed specifically so it can be on the left or the right-hand side with just a few small changes. The slingshot mechanisms, there won't be a left or a right, there'll just be a slingshot mechanism which will go in either side. The drop target banks, which I mentioned before, can be expanded depending on what the game requires or reduced. And it also, there's a mechanism, I don't know if you saw it before, it also allows the drop target to be not only, of course, to drop down automatically as well as raised automatically. So we have that feature too. So we're trying to basically standardise parts as much as possible, and these parts will appear on every game. So yes, of course, there is the initial R&D cost of developing this, but this will be set out and over a number of years within the life cycle of the cabinet and the hardware units. Any other questions from anybody? Hi at the back. Well, production runs is just simply in accordance with the market. We're not setting any sort of minimum number of production runs. It all depends on what the market wants, what the collectors want, what the operators want. We're going to be pushing this very vigorously with the operators. The pricing point, I can't give you an exact price at the moment, quite simply because I don't want to give you a figure and then have to go and reevaluate. What I can tell you is that we're trying to target this as a very affordable product for the US market. Now, one of the ways that we're looking at the moment, for example, is we, of course, are going to be making the game units over in the UK, but we're looking at actually making the cabinet units over in the US, and we're talking to a number of people at the moment, and we're looking at all options to try and get the cabinets made, or the hardware units, made over here in the US using US labour. So that's something that we're very seriously looking into, and you know, the cost benefits, of course, so we don't have to ship heavy cabinets across the sea, and you know, there's no import duty implications as well. So we are seriously looking into that. But you know, we're working to really bring the price down so it's very competitive in the market as it stands at the moment. This is not going to be an extortionately priced product. This is going to be something which we hope is going to sit very comfortably in the current market as it stands. Of course, you know, aspects like having the deluxe version with the transparent screen, of course, comes with a price tag, but it's not a significantly greater. You're not talking $2,000-$3,000 between a standard and a deluxe. You're talking probably in the region of about $1,000 maybe between the two different types of units. Hi there.
In Europe, the taxes are so high for running a pinball arcade that it's very hard to afford it. The taxes for pinballs
right.
And amusement is so high.
Right, okay. So taxes are very high, which makes it very difficult in specific countries. I'm not really sure what the direct answer that I can give you to that is, only that what we want to do, as I said, is if we succeed in our goal of making this activity mainstream again in certain countries, we can use this as a test bed to go to different countries where taxation is prohibitive at the moment and say, well, look, you know, your practices at the moment are making this great activity that everybody's getting into. You haven't got it in your country. Because the taxation is too high. So if it comes to that point there and there's a big enough demand in the market for it, we will certainly as a company get involved in trying to lobby authorities to make it an affordable product for the market again. Absolutely, yes. That's something we would be very interested in doing. Hi there. Not with me, no. There have been some videos on the net, but it's something we're actually opening up a YouTube channel very shortly where we're going to be downloading a lot of our progress there for people to go and see. We also exclusively reveal aspects of news, of course, with Pin Game Journal as well as Pinball News. So, yes, we will certainly have more aspects of the screen. There are certain challenges with using a transparent screen. A lot of it is about the lighting, but you know, when you get the lighting right, it's a wonderful experience. You can really, it really enhances the playing experience, if I can put it that way. Sure.
Now that your efforts are going to be on full throttle, how far back does that push this? That was really.
Cersei is something that we were very excited about from the start, and we certainly have not cancelled the game. As I said, the gameplay itself lent itself to being a much faster-paced game. So what we have done officially is it's on the back burner. It's something that has been put on the shelf, and it will make an appearance. That is our plan, is it will make an appearance in the future. I can't give you a definitive time at the moment, but certainly we don't want to see this as being the end of Cersei. We just feel that maybe the time is right for the market at the moment to have more mainstream themes for the time being. And you know, maybe we will do this possibly as a limited edition run in the future. Basically, if there's a market for this and people still want to have that game and see it, then we will build it. Hi there. We're using for the controlling element, as in what course to command, what different things are happening in the game, we're using a Linux-based system. But we're also using real-time PCB hardware to be able to control, obviously, the switching and the solenoids, which, of course, is you can't have latency there on a pinball machine. So, and then we have our own proprietary PCB boards as well. Hi there.
What are you using?
That also is an interesting question about distribution. What we're looking for is we're looking for operators who want to think about something new. we're effectively having to reinvent Pinball Now as a coin-op product. So we're looking at fresh people who've got fresh ideas, who really want to push this in the market. So we're looking at doing things like launch parties. We're looking at trying to get collectors, operators to the table when we have a new game come out and really educate them as to what it is that we're doing and try to excite them and create some hype in the market. So we're looking at operators who really want to be proactive with the game, who are prepared to really push this and, you know, bring some new ideas to the table. So we have some distributors already in certain countries. For example, I have an exclusive distributor in France who's committed to a certain number of tables. He's young. He's fresh thinking. In actual fact, he comes from a family that have had over 50 years in the coin-op business in France. And, you know, his grandfather started off, passed it on to his father, and now him, in his mid-30s, you know, he's still operating 80 pinball machines, even in this current climate. He's operating 80 machines, but he thinks the pinball can really come back again. And so he is the kind of guy that we really want to work with, people with fresh ideas and, you know, who want to basically re-educate people as to what pinball is all about. Hi there. What I know about the art package. Can you? Sorry, I didn't quite hear. Sure. Absolutely, I believe it's very important. I mean, the guy who's doing the art package for our first game is a guy called Ian Richardson. And Ian is actually a Marvel Comics animator and draws comics and animations for Marvel Comics. And so he's doing a fresh and unique art package for the whole of our game. So he's done a logo for us. He's doing, obviously, the artwork package for the playfield, for the side panels to decal it, and also unique back glass as well. So absolutely, I want to have unique art on our games. Hi there.
Are you planning on making any accommodations for a bank?
Absolutely, yes. I'm very interested in trying to push pinball in emerging markets and in markets which used to be big, which aren't big anymore, or markets which, you know, have never had an interest in pinball before. And I think that especially markets like China, and Russia is another market I'm very interested in getting involved into. I think, you know, if you go with a game which has, let me put it this way, if there's enough people who are interested in buying the product in a certain country, then we will build the game and we will modify it for their purposes. And that can take three different levels in my mind. One of them is the artwork package on the screen itself. So you have the inserts and the other writing on the playfield in the language of that particular country. Then you also have the software as well, which, you know, obviously tells commands, tells you what's going on, multiple and everything in that language. And finally, as well, is when it comes to the point of actually doing the voiceovers for the game, is getting it done using local actors in that language as well. So, yes, I mean, there are certain themes that we have. I mean, Full Throttle is one in particular, of course. I mean, you take Japan as a possible market. You know, they're huge on motorbiking over there. If there's a big enough market there to have a Japanese tailored game, we will build it. It's something that I feel very strongly about for getting to new markets. Okay, is that it? Does anybody have any other questions, or are we all good? Hi there.
What sort of infrastructure have you got to build these machines? I mean, have you got a large-scale factory? Are these going to be built in-house, boutique-style, with you hand-building playfield?
No, the way it's going to work is, I mean, at the moment we have a 10,000 square foot unit lined up. So this is going to be in South Wales, just outside of Merthyr Tydfil. It's got great transport links over there. There's great incentives for businesses for manufacturing and assembly over there as well, which is the reason why we decided to locate over there. So we will have a 10,000 square foot facility to be able to make these games. And essentially what we're doing is we are making an assembly line there. So we are going to be, obviously, we will have the capacity there to be able to do large volumes of games. So this is not being set up as something where we're going to roll out a couple of weeks. You know, the setup is going to be there, that if the market requires, you know, multiple hundreds, hopefully thousands of games, if the market wants it, we have the setup there to be able to build them. Hi there.
Last year, there was a guy who talked about how we put a dollar acceptor on every game, and certain games will have, electronic acceptors. Mm-hmm. What kind of payment acceptors are you planning on putting on?
Again, this is something which I'm discussing with a number of operators at the moment, and our system has been designed with the expandability there to be able to do a heck of a lot, especially regarding things like payment. I mean, for example, we're going to have a very strong emphasis on connectivity via Wi-Fi or via broadband to update score tables. So one of the kind of things that we're looking at, I'm going to go on to what you specifically asked about the payments in 1 second. So what I mean by this is, let's say, for example, you sign up on Facebook, and you sign up as a player, so you'll then play a game. Let's say you become grand champion. The game automatically then, because you're already registered, will upload your scores on a local level, a national level, and hopefully even a global level as well. So it'll be an instantaneous thing. You know, you'll log on to Facebook and somebody will see that Gary Flower has just become grand champion on Full Throttle at the Dog and Bone in Ealing in London. And that will be on, you know, Gary's Facebook page. And so everybody will see that and think, wow, I've got to get there and I've got to knock Gary off his perch. So yeah, this is one of the sort of aspects we're very keen on doing, hooking up with social media and, you know, basically giving the latest generation the technology that they will require. And that leads me onto the payment side of things as well, is that, yes, we're looking at a number of different payment types or acceptors at the moment. One in particular we're looking at is there's a new technology. I can't quite remember the name of this, but it's something that's been incorporated into some of the latest smartphones. It's in some of the Samsungs, the latest Nokia, and I believe it might be in the new iPhone 5 as well. And the way the system works is that you basically just swipe your phone at the game and it will register credits or give you the option to buy credits on this. We're also looking at ways you could even prepay. Let's say you order 10 credits online via PayPal or some other way, and then you walk up to the game and you either have a code or you text the game and you find some way of communicating with the game or identifying yourself with the game. When it knows it's you, it can then say, do you want to transfer some of your credits? So the bottom line is, and this is one thing that a lot of operators have told me, is that one of the big problems is that people are going into these places, they don't have coins in their pockets anymore. And, you know, in the 90s, people had lots of coins in their pockets, money wasn't so much of an issue, so walking up to a game and sticking your quarters in or your pound coins in wasn't really an issue back then. But now, operators are telling me this is a big problem. So, you know, there's very much a sort of an emphasis in life now to, you know, let's say, pay now and pay the price later, if I'm making sense there. So, you know, if you're prepaying or, you know, you have an option where you can get your credit card out or just put the credits there, you know, you worry about it at the end of the month when you get paid. So operators are telling us this is the kind of system that they want to see in a game. So we're very much looking at all different elements to try and make this a reality again. And I'll just end up on this point by saying that this is a very attractive element to operators as well, whereby if you can have a part cash, part electronic system of accepting money on a pinball machine, then it can reach a stage. For example, an operator can have a machine on a site and he might have a 50-50 split with the pub owner. So one of the big problems about pinball in the past is that the operator wants to keep the keys in his pocket, and of course the operator doesn't have the key. So if you have something stupid like a stuck ball on the side of the playfield, you have to wait for the operator to get down there, open up the machine to get the trap ball down. Of course, WMS addressed this in the late with Pinball 2000 by having a separate sort of coin box entity, which was a very good idea. We want to take that a step further, and you know, we're hoping that it might become a 50-50 split. If it does, then you can leave the keys with the operator. They can take the money out of the cash box whenever they want. The stuff that's been collected electronically will go then to the you know, to the person who owns the game, to the distributor or the operator. And then, you know, the balance, whatever's owing, can be adjusted then. And we think that that's possibly the future of how CoinOp can work. Martin. Sure. Well, I mean, John Trudeau, as we all know, is a legendary game designer with, I think, more than 30 years' experience of designing games. I've been talking to John for a while about what it is that we're doing, and I talk to a lot of people in the industry. And, you know, John, we expressed a big interest in having John design games for us. And John expressed a great interest in what we were doing, our whole philosophy, and said that he was very interested in coming to us. And so it was just a case of sitting down, hammering out the points, and really it was a very easy decision for both of us to make. So John's very excited to come on board us, and we're very excited to have John as well. And what we're actually looking to do in our, let's say, philosophy of designing new games is to have a mixture of new blood coming in designing new pinballs with fresh ideas, but also experienced people who know the kind of games that people want to play and bring that experience to the table. So we're just trying to bring in a good mix with the company. Okay, guys, is anybody, any final questions before we wrap up? Hi there.
All the designers
I think in recent times, if you're asking me about ones within the last few years, which make it easy, I would say something like Tron is probably a fairly easy game to understand out of the box. That would be my answer. I think something like Tron. I mean, what I will say is, my role as obviously overseer of the company and everything that's going on is, first and foremost, I am a pinball enthusiast. I love pinball. I have a real passion for pinball, and I just love playing pinball. You know, I have a nice collection of games, new and old games, and you know, I'm bringing what my ideas, the ideas I've heard from operators, what they want as well, and I just believe that the people that we need to make pinball machines for, first and foremost, are the people who don't know what pinball is. But at the same time, we can't forget the people like everybody in the audience here who love pinball as well. So we're just trying to, you know, address both, which is why we want to have a basic rule set there where you walk up to the game and you know very quickly what it is you need to do. I mean, one of the things, for example, having the large transparent screen over the playfield and having the smaller one in the playfield too, is allows us a lot of possibilities for tutorials as well. So, you know, we want to have an option on our games where you walk up to a game and, you know, let's say you don't know how to play pinball, just press and have a quick 20-second tutorial on the transparent screen. We can show people exactly the shots they want to do. You know, do this and this, you'll get this. This and this, and you get that. Make it very easy for them. Because let's face it, nobody wants to sit down for 5 minutes and, you know, learn how to play the game. And also, as well, I don't know about you guys as well, but I always find when I walk up to a game, I don't really want to sit there reading a scorecard, even though it's an instruction card, even though it's quite small. It's still, I want to be playing the game. So if you can just give them something in a short burst, 15, 20 seconds, and actually visually show them, do this, this, and this, then I think that's the kind of thing that new players will be prepared to do. Well, time's up. Thank you very much for listening. And I'll be around all for the rest of the week anyway. So if you want to ask me any questions, please feel free to do so. Thank you very much.